stretch out, but your skin can bring you so much pain. Now I hear you say. Welcome to episode number 74 of the Inside Running Podcast. Thanks for joining us for another week. Another big show coming up. We've got two guests joining us. No traditional kind of interview this week. Instead, we've got Alan McCubbin coming on to talk about some latest nutrition stuff for runners. And Brett Robinson's also going to join us from London to recap his performance at the World Cross Country Champs on the weekend. So plenty coming to your ears in this next hour and a bit. Welcome to my co-host, as usual, Julian Spence down in Ballarat. How are you going?
Yeah, getting there, mate.
Getting there. And Bradley Croker up in Canberra.
Hey, mate, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you? I am, like, hanging on. I was trying to get some information from your Strava during the week, because you did let the listeners know last week that if we keep an eye on your Strava, we'll know if you turn the page or not.
I didn't run the first 2 days of last week.
And then everything was normal.
Was that?
And then everything was, like, just the same. It, like, wasn't fast, it wasn't slow. You left me in suspense.
Yeah, so it's pretty much the same. Just forcing myself out the door, really. So I'll probably feel a little bit less pain and tightness in my daily life, which is good, because it was starting to sort of wear me down at work, just not being able to do anything with the kids, and even just bending over to pick up cones was just painful. So probably not quite as bad as that now, but the runs are still pretty ordinary. But so I got through 57K last week, did five runs between 14K and 10. Yeah, so.
The thoracic adjustment didn't work then?
Well, I guess so. I'm still doing all the thoracic stuff. So I guess some of this stuff does take a bit of time to maybe correct, like not just a one-off treatment. I do see him again, but it's not for like another week and a half. So it's pretty much 2 and a bit weeks between treatments. So it's just hard to get in to see him, which is not ideal, but I'll keep doing this stuff and keep trying to get out most days until I see him again. But if it sort of keeps going, then I think I will start just doing some cycling in the gym, just because I'm getting sick of just running, like not doing anything sort of hard, whereas I feel like I can jump on the bike and keep some good fitness that way.
Why wouldn't you cycle on the roads? Why the gym? That'd be boring as.
No, I like it. I can control the effort a lot better in the gym than I can on the road, because you get periods where you're just cruising down a hill. So I'll just go to the gym, work hard for an hour. I just find you can get a really good workout in the gym for an hour on the bike than you can sort of outside.
So you do a group class?
Nah, just go solo. Solo.
They're bloody hard. I would never scoff at them. They are fucking hard.
I'm not scoffing. Yeah. I've been there and done that. Come out dripping in sweat, like I was the unfittest bloke there.
Yeah. Mm. Well, yeah. I got towed up when I went to one. I wanted it over at 20 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, they're shocking. All these girls with like makeup and stuff, like not even a drip of sweat on them. They're just walking out like they go straight to the nightclubs.
Yeah.
That's what it was like up here anyway.
You got
Brad. Yeah, we got one. OPT, you been there?
Been there, carved it up.
Yeah, would have got a few punch-ons there, I reckon, OPT. They won't be sponsoring a show anytime soon. Brad, you were going to say something.
Oh, just like one of the positives, though, I don't feel like I haven't been running a lot, but I don't feel like I've lost a lot of fitness. Like I still feel, I'm certainly not puffing running the paces that I'm running. So that's a good sign. And that's probably the one reason why I'm continuing to just get out the door. Cause I know that if I take a month completely off, then I might maintain my fitness, but I know my legs will really struggle the first bit back. So, anyway, we'll just keep doing a bit of running, but yeah, I think the gym's getting closer.
But if you did take a month off and then were injury free and then rebuilt, wouldn't that be better than just doing what you're doing?
Oh, definitely. And I guess that's the thing. I'm better off just taking a complete break and then just dealing with the, I generally find the first couple of weeks back, I get a bit sore in different areas. Whereas at the moment, yes, I have constant hamstring tightness, but I don't have, my quads won't get banged up at the moment, because I'm at least getting out every day. But I don't want to change too much until I see this guy again, because then I just add all these extra variables that I've changed.
These are my two bits of advice for you.
Oh, here we go.
Stop. Three bits of advice for Croker. Stop chasing the magic practitioner or the magic solution, because I don't think it's out there for you. That's number one. So you could go around every single practitioner in Canberra, and I don't know whether you'll get the right solution without taking a full rest break and letting your body recover. And then you can start fresh, and you know if you give it a proper 3 to 4 weeks ain't going to do shit to your fitness. You'll be fine. I mean, what do you need to be fit for? You got no races.
No, so exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So you might as well get unfit. And coming back, number two, don't run so fast. Run slower. There's extra stress on the body when you run at the intensity that you do or the pace that you do. Don't run 4.10s. Don't run 4.20s. Come back running 4.50s. That's appropriate jogging pace for you still. I don't think you need to go faster than that when you're coming back. I had three bits, didn't I?
Well, at least that's something you haven't tried yet, Brad. Like, when has it ever been a 450K from you on Strava? For 12K or something, 450 average.
And there probably won't be, to be honest.
But why not just try it? What do you got to lose?
It's just not the way I run.
You run injured and fucking beat up. That's how you run.
But there was a long period of time where I wasn't beaten up. So, and anyway, we'll see. But I'm pretty close to, as Moose said, having a break. But I've got to see this guy on the 12th of April. Anyway, we'll see. And to be honest, I'm a bit just over it. Like, I don't even feel like a runner anymore. I get myself out the door so I don't feel as bad. I'm scoffing down some ice cream each night. So I'm sort of just more keeping some general fitness than I am about performance.
When you say you're not that type of runner, 450, is that like you just don't feel like you're covering the ground like an actual runner how you usually do, or like an ego thing? What do you mean by that?
It's definitely not an ego thing. It's just that's just not the rhythm. Like, I just feel so shit running that pace. If I didn't run for a year, then that probably would be the pace. But whatever, I've got some level of fitness. Unless it was like the first kilometer and I'm super stiff, then that's okay. But I don't know. I find 4:30s is pretty comfortable and slow. But yeah, I know other people out there, big believers in running super, super slow. I've been able to string together some pretty good training for 20 years, not doing that. So probably not.
When are you the chronically injured bloke? I thought that was you.
Not really. No.
Anyway, it's not like
Move on. I feel this conversation can only go in one direction from here. Julian, tell us about your week. Are you injured still?
Kind of injured still.
Got any advice for him, Brad?
I'll just check his Strava. I can pull something up that he's done wrong.
Did I take some time off? I give it some time?
The interim? You didn't give it enough time. If you're still injured.
Well, I had, after Sunday, I went to Hilly. Too hilly, so I stirred the hips up a little bit. It's like an adductor tendon on the pelvis. That's where I'm sore. I think back in the day, they used to call it osteoarthritis pubis, if you've heard of that. The footy players used to get it all the time. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, had off. Rode the bike Wednesday at Run Club. Thursday, went out for a ride with Bree after work. It was actually really nice. Thursday, went for a 4-minute jog, 1-minute walk, did that 5 times just to test the hip, then went and got in the gym. It felt pretty good, actually. Friday went down, Saturday, ended up heading down the coast to Anglesey to help out with some work down there, and ran, it's bloody hilly down there, it's really hard to find a flat spot, so ran 8K, felt good in the morning, and then Sunday morning went down and met Ali and Rochelle Wilson and her husband Matt, and Bree rode her cyclocross bike through Aries Inlet. We kind of ran the Surf Coast Century Leg 3, recovered 500, climbed 500 meters over 90 minutes or 20K around that, and it was a bit too hilly for my hip, so I pulled up pretty rough from that. And then Monday's next week, so pretty poor week, 31K, eased back into it, overcooked it on the Sunday. And yeah, I currently, it was a little sore on the start of my run tonight, so I cut my run way down, but by the end of it, it felt a fair bit better. So tomorrow I'll go and test it with like 45 minutes on the flat cruising, and we'll go from there.
That's why'd me. Why'd you run 90 minutes on Sunday?
Because Saturday, I probably could have cut that shorter, and it was a bit hilly, but up until like 75 minutes into that run, it felt fine. It felt perfect. And then I'm like, as soon as I got to that 80 minute mark, I thought, shit, you should be at the car right now, because everything, every step after that was starting to feel a bit sorer and sorer. And I'm like, let's get back. And then on the Monday, it felt okay. And then because I've been doing a fair bit of work, like laboring, kind of building type work, it stirred it up a fair bit. I've been bending over a lot. I've been lifting stuff. I've been hands and knees, squatting. That's what stirred it up the most, I reckon. We'll see. This week will be a telling week.
Running a bit with Ali Pashley down there as well. How's she shaped up after the marathon?
Yeah, she obviously recovered better than me. She doesn't have those niggles. She is pretty strong. Ran it with her on the Sunday and the Monday. She's pretty fit. Next week, Monday, she heads to Flagstaff, and we'll have a training camp there before she runs at Peyton Jordan, 10,000 meter, trying to get the qualifier for, well, both the Olympics and world champs.
In the 10K as well. Get a couple next to her name.
Well, that's the goal. I think the A plan is to run the 10K, get the qualifier so she can run that at Doha and not run the marathon there. And then also, if you can have a, like, you know how strong we are in the ladies marathon at the moment, you're not like guaranteed with 226. I mean, not anymore, not with the quality of girls around. So if you can have as many as you can, that'd be many events as you can, that would be ideal.
And a bit of championship experience at Doha as well.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely. That'll be a big thing for her, because she's only been to World Half. She hasn't been to a big championships yet.
Yep, exciting. Thanks for that little update. My week I was rebuilding, and I think I pulled it off. Pulled it off better than you anyway, I'm thinking. 45 minutes easy on the Monday, so we progressed it like a little bit each day. So 45 minutes easy on the Monday, 50 minutes on the Tuesday. Was really starting to feel injury pain-free at this stage. Body was nearly 10 out of 10. 52 and a half minutes on the Wednesday. 55 minutes on the Thursday. After that, I was sick of jogging. Body felt amazing. Well, didn't feel amazing, but didn't feel like I was running in pain and stuff anymore. And I was starting to go a bit quicker. For me, most of my runs are at 4:30, and these ones were starting to get closer to 4:20. Not looking at pace or anything on my watch, just kind of going on feel, and that's what I was getting home with. Friday, I was in Bendigo. That's what day I'm up to. And I did a session, just thought I'd test the hip out, test the legs out, test the quads out. And I did a workout of 3x5 minutes with 2 minutes jog in between. Just made this one off the top of my head. I thought it was a good one that I wouldn't go too fast, given they were 5 minute efforts, and I could just settle down, put the heart rate monitor on, tried to keep the heart rate around 160 to 165. I'm pretty unfit, but it went well. It was good to run fast again. Such a strange feeling when you haven't ran fast for, that was, nearly 3 weeks. So like 20 days, I think it was, and pretty much hit the 5 minute efforts at about 3:18 pace, and jogged the 2 minutes. And yeah, the heart rate was kind of 161 for the first 5 minutes, 166 for the second one, 167 for the third. So pretty high for that kind of pace for me, but came away from it good. Pulled up fine, and the plan for me for the week was to get to 60 minutes pain-free, which I did on Saturday. And then on Sunday, I was feeling a bit sorry for myself. I had a mate come over. He was up from Melbourne to go to a wedding, and stayed up pretty late watching the World Cross Country, had a couple of beers, and yeah, spent a fair few hours on the couch on Sunday watching the AFL Women's Grand Final, and yeah, just reminiscing about the night before. So that's my week. I did.
You had a good week.
I had a good week. Like, yeah, 71K, ticked everything I wanted, and yeah, I'm back. I want to try and get to 100 this week. But yeah, patience was my big thing. I'm just like adding 2.5 or 5 minutes every day to get to a stage where I was ready to go.
That's smart. And those reps you did, don't, like, it doesn't matter about the pace. I remember coming back doing some threshold work. I think we did 4 by 6 minutes, and I was around the same mark around that, coming back from the marathon in Berlin, actually.
Because I remember asking you exactly, I said something like, shouldn't that feel easy for you? You just did a marathon at that pace. And you're like, no, because you would have just run Berlin at about 3:15 pace.
Yeah, so I was really hoping you said that rather than you said, oh, I ran 302s, 303s.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're on track. That's good.
And the heart rate for me just kept me in check. Like, I'm just like, because the legs still feel like they can go. So, like, I'm going through, I was doing them in the lake, down the lake in Bendigo, which is a beautiful spot, kind of got spray painted marks every 100 metres, and kind of went through the first 400 in, I don't know, 74 seconds, and it felt fine in the legs. And then I was like, this is stupid, pull back. Like, your heart rate's already at 163. You've got three of these to do. Just relax, get it done, come off the track before anything gets too hard. So it's good.
Oh, you reckon he's getting smarter, Croker?
Not based on tonight's session. Back to 303s tonight.
That was 304s, wasn't it, tonight?
Oh, 304s. Last rep. Oh, no.
Last rep was the slowest one, wasn't it?
No, well, yeah. You had a 303. But you ran a bit further. You ran more than a K. So you're 259 pace for the last rep.
No, but I didn't. It's just the spray. You go from the spray-painted marks. Every spot's the same.
Well, nah, Strava doesn't lie, mate. 1K.02 at 2:59 average.
I might have cut the Andy Buchanan corner down there. It's this corner that he cuts all the time. Might have hit that one in the last lap. Might have been a dog there or something.
Old Brady's back, but at least he's not injured.
That was that was a very even session, that one tonight. We'll talk about that next week on the show. But anyway, thanks, Brad. I thought I was going all right. Just progression, things are right, and then you just shut me straight down.
That's what I'm here for.
Let's get over this. Let's move on. Talk about some running.
Let's thank some patrons before we do. I'm going to thank Peter Bracken. He was the Peter from last week, we think. He runs the Burt Squad up there in Brisbane. Know a few guys training in that group, seem to be doing some good things. And he's running the Boston Marathon in about a week and a half, and he's aiming to run 2:25. So good luck, Peter, and thanks for your support of the podcast. I'm also going to thank Brett Davis. He ran 16:33 at the Pier to Pub 5K and a 39:35 at the Run Melbourne 10K. He has a screenshot on his Strava that he got beaten by the Puffing Billy, so hopefully the train down there. So hopefully he goes a bit quicker next time and can beat the train. And I don't know, Moose, I know you know Craig Davis, but this guy looks like he's a spitting image of him, so I'm thinking they've got to be related in some way or another.
I think he is. Him. I think it's Brett, Grant, Craig, and Shane Davis all come out of a hole down in Colac. That's what they did. They sprouted out down there. Yeah, I know, very similar looking fellas.
Yeah.
And I think Brett's probably got the most talent out of the bunch as well.
So that's some quick times there. And good to have some brothers chipping in on Patreon. So that would be maybe our first brother combination. Who you boys got? Who's going next, Brad?
Yes, I got a shout out to Nick Kirkup from Brisbane. He's got a 16:06 park run PB and ran 3 hours at the Brisbane Marathon in 2017. But based on his park run PB, I reckon with a bit of marathon specific work, he should be able to smash 3 hours. He also barracks for Melbourne Football Club, so can't win everything, I guess, Nick. But thanks for your support. And second shout out is to Jordan McGarry. He ran a 5K PB at the recent Melbourne Uni 5K in 17:17, and he's a great supporter of the AV winter and summer calendar. Also ran Melbourne Marathon in 3:10 last year, which was probably worth 3 hours considering the conditions. And Brady has stalked his Strava and found out that he watched some sumo wrestling once. So well done, Jordan, and thanks for your support.
Could have been more than once, and he just took a photo of it once, though.
Yeah.
What club's he from, Brady?
Didn't see that, actually, to be honest.
Okay.
Sorry, I just did see it. When you go to this website, it shows you all the races they've done, and there was a lot of AV ones in there. So that's how I got that bit of information.
Yeah. All right. Well, Michael George is also from Melbourne. He ran at the Melbourne Uni 5K too. Geez, might have to get here next year, boys. There's a lot of supporters there. Ran a new PB 16.
Autographs on over the fence. What's up?
I like that race. I might run it.
You ran your PB there.
Yeah. I think it's still the best PB on this podcast.
That is.
thanks. He's had a good progression, Michael. December, he ran 18:30. January, 17:24. March, 16:56. So he's moving well and he's progressing. Must have a good coach. I'm not sure who it is. He ran 10K time trial on the track last week. Whoa, that's a rough thing to do. 25-lap time trial, 35:49. So that is, well, that's pretty good based off his 5K PB. Looks like he's got some strength. Second patron also shout-out, Lee Mosell, South Australian listener. Oh, he was fourth at Barossa Marathon. I thought Ironman might have bought that event. Is that? We'll have to look into that. He ran 2:47 there. That's solid. I'm pretty sure it's hilly up there. Hilly through the Barossa. So that's a good time. He enjoys a bike ride going by Strava. He may have ran Berlin Marathon, New York, Two Bays, and Comrades, because that name's popping up on a lot of websites, apparently, with some race results. So he's a bit of a traveler, bit of a trail runner, and an ultra guy, too.
And triathlete as well. He's done an Ironman, a half Ironman. Just a few bonus ones for you, Lee. Didn't put those in the show notes, but I just had it in my head.
You ruined him until that. I was a big fan until I heard that.
You run 2:47. You got to be a fan of a guy running 2:47.
Oh, he did Comrades. Oh, no, more importantly, he ran Two Bays. So always a fan of those runners.
Two Bays in South Africa, though, not the one down in...
That's two oceans, isn't it?
Oh, I thought it was two bays. I've typed the wrong thing.
Oh, fuck, mate. That's two oceans.
Two oceans. I'm sorry. It's probably some
man. That's a big event down there. That and Comrades are the two big ultras.
Yeah, they use that as a lead-in one, don't they? Isn't it like 50K?
Yeah, a lot of them do. A lot of them do.
Let's talk about another K that was another race that was a big event, the World Cross Country, boys. Just stay up and watch it Saturday night?
No, I went to bed.
I tried. I watched the women's under 20, and then I watched the men's under 20, and then I watched half of the women's, and missed the finish, and then I watched the men's start, like the first half lap, and then I fell asleep and I was no good. So I kind of fucked that up because I wasted my sleep and I didn't even watch the race.
You've got to commit to these things. Yeah.
That was a fail. That was a super fail. Not.
Hey, the stream was really easy.
And you're giving me shit moves for not staying up.
Oh, I tried, mate. At least I had a crack. So I'm an athletics fan.
You just fallen in and out of sleep on the couch while I was going.
No, I had it in bed and it was in front of me. And
That's a mistake, going to bed to watch it.
I had to, but it was in a strange house.
I don't even want to know where you were. Hey, the stream was good. It was easy to find. Sometimes trying to find these races is difficult and they make it hard for athletics fans to actually see these races. Stream was high quality, great commentary. It was good seeing the splits. I love that Athletics Australia did like a promo with a bit of a panel discussion and some old footage of like Benita and Mona when they were first and fourth back in the day. So I felt like the hype was really good for this event and that IIIF put some good energy into it. Yep.
I didn't see that stuff, unfortunately. But I know that I got a high definition feed, which is pretty rare in these things. Like you could tell who everyone was. You could read the names on the bibs. The camera work was pretty good. We got the real, like they had the camera at the bottom of the hill up the museum and it showed just how steep the course was. So they had the cameras in the right spots.
For sure. And the commentary really did give the Australian guys a bit of love. Like, they talked about Stewie. Obviously, he was a DNS. If you didn't know that, that's a bit of news for you. He didn't start. And they spoke about how they would have loved to see him on the start line. And then, really talked up Brett's kind of recent performances 2 years ago and 4 years ago. So, I felt like they gave the Aussies a real good rap.
Yeah, they definitely liked white people, the commentators. Especially, there's a video going around on Twitter where they count the someone from Kenya, I think it was, counted the times that Jacob Ingebrigtsen's name got mentioned versus the top three, and it's very heavily weighted towards Ingebrigtsen, even though he finished 12th, which I like. It's pretty relevant because he was a favorite, one of the favorites coming in, and is obviously a bit of a romantic story for him to win the race, but they were still talking about him and the camera was still on him, like, once he dropped well back. And there's a few people that are upset by it.
What's your thoughts on that? Like, he's one of the heroes of the sport in a way, like the big personalities. So do we have to, like, make the most of him being there?
Yeah, no, he is a story, though. Like, I mean, I'm sure everyone, the problem is that these East Africans have stories too. It's just they don't get told. So we're hearing Jacob Ingebrigtsen's story over and over again, and that's great. Like, he is winning European championships and whatnot. He's running faster than any other under 20 over 1500. I think maybe there's a couple that are around him. But then the East African stories get lost along the way, if they have them, and if the commentators know them, they're not telling them. And then if they don't know them, then why don't they know them? Is this the general running media that aren't looking into it hard enough, or is it the athletic federations that aren't telling the stories well enough? So there's like a real unknown. Like, you see these, we look at the results and we see in the under 20 men, like and the ladies who won, but we don't know them. If we can hear the stories behind them, we'll follow them. We follow them in races. We hear it all the time on the podcast. If someone who listens to the podcast hears, let's say, Jack Rayner, right? Hears his interview, develops a little bit of a relationship with him, even though he doesn't know it. They start following him. They're connected to him. They'll follow his results. They'll look out for him. They'll like his Instagram. And it builds a hype around him, and it builds his profile. And that's what we want. We want spectators understanding the stories and following with some passion. And the East Africans, their stories don't get told like some other stories get told. And that could be a reflection on their federations not promoting them as well as they should be.
That's a good point, Moose. Feel that the African stories develop through their results as opposed to before they've actually been good. So, like, you know, Joshua Cheptegei, who won, you know, his story is almost the fact that, well, he blew up at the last World Cross. So that's his story, but we don't know a lot, you know, how he got to be world-class to start with. If that makes sense, it's almost like it develops once they actually do something good.
I just copied and pasted an image talking about under 20 race. I just copied and pasted an image into our document that we work off that Josh Papa put on Twitter today. Christian from Norway just retweeted it, actually, of a couple of Ethiopian guys, that it's very questionable if they're under 20 or not. You seen the picture?
Yeah, I've seen the picture, and I had that on my Moose on the Loose, actually. But I'm sort of in two minds about it, because you can pull some photos from the middle of races, especially cross-country races on a hard course, and get some blokes looking pretty awful and then use that as your evidence. But then you can take a photo of someone like on the start line with no, like, looking fresh as a daisy, and they look 12 years younger. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a little bit harsh to pull out one photo and point fingers, but like, they
Brady's just jealous that he can't grow facial hair like that Ethiopian guy on the picture.
Have you seen my beard? It's fantastic. Yeah. Been going since wedding day. It's a good beard.
Can't really, you've got to see Brady's beard. It's pretty impressive. It looks like Gimli the dwarf.
Thank you for backing me up there. Not sure about the comparison.
No, I'm unsure on it. I feel like it's a bit harsh to judge on that one photo alone. So I was pretty cautious doing a moose on the loose on it, because it's out there, this age group cheating. The dodgy thing is they're both born in the same month of the same year, which makes them only 18. So they've overcooked it if they have falsified some birth dates, because you look at them and think, oh, maybe 20. I know there's some people that develop a little later in their teens, but then you think 18, oh shit, nah, you guys aren't 18, sorry.
I was just bringing it up. I'm not sure as well, and I know there's some questions about, do we do bone density scans or DNA scans for some of these guys before they're on the start line? Probably, yeah, never thought about that in the past, but something we need to in the future. Let's talk about the racing though. Hey, we've talked about stream, talked about staying up or falling asleep. Do you want to go men's 10K first?
Sure. Let's chat about that.
Men's 10K, Joshua Cheptegei. We've talked about him in the past, and I think someone on this show, one of you boys said he's going to be the next big star of the future. He already kind of was, but he won 31:40. He's from Uganda, and so was second place, Jacob Kipolimo, in 31:44. And then the reigning two-time champion, also won New York Marathon at one stage as well. He's won World Half Marathon. You might remember he had that like blistering 5K splitting like 13:10 or 13:08 at Valencia that time. Jeffrey Komworu, he ran 31:55, ran off his feet in the last lap to come third. So a bit of an upset. It was a super deep field, but people were thinking Komworu was going to go back to back to back.
I thought he came third at New York.
I think he won the year before. I'll look that up.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's won it before.
He's won it before.
But he was third this year or sixth.
This was a couple of years ago.
Joshua Cheptegei, he had broken the world 15K record, I believe, earlier in the year. Mm-hmm. So obviously in four, and that had a big hill in it. I watched that race on YouTube the other day, and they go over a solid hill. So very strong, obviously. I mean, he's basically unbeatable at the moment, this bloke. He wins everything.
Mm. And he spent a good chunk of last year injured as well.
Pretty much after the car crash,
he missed, was it like 6 months or something?
Yeah. Good to see him back. It's good to see two Ugandans first and second. That was a bit of a shock. Australian boys, Brett Robinson was in 30th. Going to hear from him in a minute. 33:34. Matthew Ramsden, who came in as the emergency, was our second across the line in 39th in 33:56. Jack Rayner was 63rd in 34:33. Harry Summers, 56th in 34:23. And Jack Bruce was 95th in 35:32. Stewie McSween did not start because he was ill. Brett talks about a bit of that coming up in the audio. Boys, anything to pick out there?
For me, Matt Ramsden, what a star run. Like, this guy barely made the team. He was a ring-in. And comes out and performs like that, like well outside his distance, his preferred distance. To me, that's obviously Brett ran faster than him, but like if we looked at where everyone was sitting before this day, that's probably the most surprising result, I reckon, him performing so well for the men's side.
22 seconds back. Brad?
Probably just how brutal the event is in that, like you look at Brett, he finished, basically 59 seconds ahead of Jack, and there's 33 people in that minute, you know. So you really can't afford to blow up or take your foot off the accelerator at all, because you're not going to – it's not like, you know, most Australian races where you might have one guy go past you. If you have a bad last kilometre, you're going to lose 20, 30 spots.
Mm. And I think Jack Rayner was coming off the flu as well, so he was a bit under the weather leading in.
I looked at the times. I'm pretty I was disappointed I wasn't there. I think I would have won this race. 31:40 winning time. These blokes just cruising.
10K, yeah, just jogging around.
Slow.
Or just split the last 10K at Lake Biwa, Reed.
I don't know.
Probably Fun. Quicker than that.
No. The first 10K might have been. I would have won. Shit. Should have gone. Should have put my hand up.
Australian boys finished 8th overall. They were one position behind Spain And we took down the US, which is pretty good because the US had five Kenyan guys who have got some pretty amazing PBs next to their name. So good to take down the Americans.
Yeah, I wonder, like, that team, were they just not training on hills? Or what the, how could they not, how could they all perform so poorly? I'm just flabbergasted that a team with stars like that, with their times, like 13 low guys, like a whole team of them basically, wasn't competitive on the top end. Like, did they get their training wrong? Is that what happened? I'm just wondering.
Not sure. No answers for you. I'm sure if you spend some time on a Let's Run, there'd be a whole lot of people telling you what they did wrong. Probably pretty opinionated people in there. Let's go to some audio from Brett, hey? This goes for about 18 minutes. He's going to tell us all about the race and his lead up to the London Marathon in 4 weeks' time. All right, Brett Robinson joins us again. Welcome back to the Inside Running Podcast, fresh off 30th position at the World Cross Country Champs just a couple of days ago. Thanks, Brett.
No, thanks for having me.
All the way from London, is that correct?
Yep, got back to London on Sunday after the race and then just here for another 4 weeks until London Marathon.
Yeah, cool. So kind of settled there now and, big congratulations after the weekend.
Yeah, thank you. I've another good run at World Cross. I've been pretty consistent now, 28th, 29th and 30th. So,
yeah, I did have that down on my sheet to talk about. Like, that's pretty consistent. It's over 6 years as well. Like, most people don't probably know that that's over that period of time every 2 years that World Cross has held.
Yeah, I wish I was 27th and had gone one better, but and it's weird because they've all been completely different runs. Like, when I came 29th, I don't think I ran that well, and then when I came 28th in China, I thought I had one of the best races of my life, and I only improved by one spot, and then Saturday was actually, I felt it was like a really strong run as well, but I just couldn't pick up any more spots, so it is World Cross, it is a tough race.
And this year, like, was especially deep, wasn't it? Like, the Kenyans and Ethiopians and even the American team, which didn't perform too well, but it just seemed like there was just superstars when you were watching the live stream and they were introducing everyone.
Yeah, definitely, like, those top, there was, like, five probably superstars that could, win next year's Olympics in the 5K, 10K, which usually you do get a couple of good guys, but this seemed to be, like, very stacked on the top end. And then just all the way through, it was just a lot of Africans and then now you got America with five Kenyans as well, which makes it another challenge.
Yeah, it's a pretty deep race, isn't it? Would that be the deepest race you think you've ever been in?
Yeah, I'd say so. Definitely, I reckon.
Yeah, it's coming from an Olympic finalist and like World Champs finalist. Yeah. It's pretty amazing to hear that. So tell us about the hype around the event. Like, what was it like in Denmark before we get into the specifics about the race?
I think there was a bit of buzz around town. Like, a lot of people, I guess we walk around in our tracksuits, so they kind of realise we're there for something. And a lot of people were coming up and asking, like, what country we're from, running World Cross Country. And at the actual course, they said there was like over 10,000 people there on that actual roof that everyone's been talking about. Like, the crowds there were crazy. It was like being at like kind of the Tour de France when they're going up the mountain stages and you're running between people. Like, it was, and that was like the worst place because you're running so slow and you got these people yelling at you to go harder. And you're just like, I can't.
So, like, people are obviously recognising you guys behind, in town and stuff beforehand, and then did you get a chance to run on the course before race day?
Yeah, so I went the day before. I came into Denmark pretty late because I was already in London, and then day before the race we went out and ran just only did one lap of the course. Like, we didn't want to do too many because it is like doing a little mountain course. I don't know, everyone was freaking out about the course. Like, I don't know what they expected because it's World Cross Country, it's always going to be a hard course, there's always going to be some kind of challenges. And yes, this one was especially hilly, but all it did, I reckon, was just slow down the times. Like, everyone's got to run on it, so everyone just kind of made it a bit, ran a bit slower, like probably 2-3 minutes slower than what they would have.
Yeah, well, you came in 33 minutes and 34 seconds, and that'd probably be the slowest 10K you've ran for the last 25 years, I'm guessing.
Yeah, actually, probably since, I think I ran my first 10K in Canberra when I was about I don't know, 15, and it was about 33, 40, so probably since then.
Yeah, and, like, did you check out the course? I know they did a really good video that I think we shared on our Facebook page mid last week. Like, were you looking into all those details and looking at the videos of the course and all that kind of stuff beforehand, or stay away from it?
Yeah, I definitely looked at it a fair bit, but it's pretty hard. Like, I don't think the video really kind of did it justice, or, like, it's hard to then... You can look at the video and then you run on the course. You're like, wow, this is completely different to what I thought. Like, but the event organizers were really good with, like, how much they promo they were doing for it and trying to get everyone to realize how hard this course was going to be.
And now, can you maybe give us some specifics about the course? Like, I think there was a water pit, a mud pit, obviously that big hill you're talking about, a sand pit as well.
Yeah.
And then did they have a Viking pit? What was the Viking thing? Was that just the bar?
To be honest, I didn't see the Viking pit. So I don't know if it was just on and I just didn't realise. But I'll take you through the course. So pretty much, like, you start uphill. And it's a bit like Gels Park, if people from Victoria have run that. Just kind of a fairly steep uphill, and it narrowed really quick. Like, maybe after 250 meters, it just went narrow to and then that was like kind of carnage around there. But also there was like where there was like paths, usually there was sand over it, and so you kind of get momentum. Then all of a sudden you're in this little sand pit and trying to get out of that. And then so it was maybe like a 600 meter hill up, and then you go through the beer tent. And that was kind of cool, like, because you go inside for a little bit and then you got heaps of people cheering for you. And then you have another sand pit, and then you go up another little steep hill, and then you start the downhill. And, like, that's just, like, it was just so steep. And you're, like, trying to go as hard as you can, but it just, like, hurts your body. And then you finally get down the bottom of that and you go through the water pit, which was fine. It was just, like, running through a puddle. Like, it was, like, no real worries. Then you go to the mud pit, which is a bit harder, and then the sand pit, which was, again, just you lose so much momentum. And then you eventually come to the roof, which was like a 10% incline over, I'm not sure how many meters, maybe 150-200 meters. And then you gotta come back down that, which is just, again, steep as, and then that's the end of the lap.
And then 5 laps, 2K loop, wasn't it?
Yeah. So when you ran up the hill the first time, you know, another 4 times, which is, it's going to hurt by the end. But then, to be honest, I kind of made an effort to not go too hard on that roof hill. Stewie said to me before the race, he goes, everyone that's been going well has not been smashing that roof hill. They kind of just been going through it. And then, because that was the thing with the course, which I didn't really like, that you could, say, make up 10 metres on a hill, but then because the downhill was, like, straight after it and so steep, it just brings everyone back together. So you kind of no reward for your good work. They needed a bit of a flat section or something where you could, like, I don't know, make a move or, like, push through a part. Like, you could just, the hills were so steep where you can only go a certain pace, and the downhills were so steep where you can only go a certain pace. So it's just, like, wasn't really breaking the field up too much.
Yeah, I did hear that there was, like, nowhere you could get a bit of, like, momentum, a bit of rhythm and kind of do some work. It was just about kind of surviving it all.
Yeah, exactly. There's no momentum at all. It's just either you're going up or down. The only flat section was through the beer tent, which was maybe 50 metres long.
Yeah, crazy. So how did, like, off the gun, did they go hard?
Yeah, but it was hard considering it was a hill rep. Like, it wasn't as hard as some of the other ones I've been in, but, yeah, it was pretty hard. I think I was only 50th or something through the first lap. And then I kind of made my way through up into the low 30s. But yeah, there's always, like, it's funny, a Danish guy was leading after about a K, and he was walking after about 3K. But yeah, there's a lot of people go out way too hard.
And do you, like, the team was, you know, pretty young there, and so I think you'd be the most experienced kind of cross-country runner amongst all those people in the Australian men's team. Like, do you pull those guys aside before the race and say, this is what I think, like, I've been here before, or are you kind of just all doing your own thing out there?
Probably it was a bit easier because, like, most of the, wait, all the boys, oh, except for Harry, were, like, in my group anyway, so I could kind of talk to them, no worries, because, like, I'm training with them, hanging out with them all the time. And yeah, I kind of, like, just told them not to worry about the course, and if you play it smart, like, a lot of people are gonna be coming back to you at the end. I think that's with any World Cross as well.
Mm. And did you find that you went through like different headspaces where you were kind of cooked and were wondering how you were going to finish and then you'd come good again, or was it pretty consistent?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there were some points where I was like, maybe in like the third lap, where I was like really struggling on some of the hills. And then I was just like, all right, no, let's just kind of either relax a little bit through this and then try to finish it hard, which I was able to. I think in that third lap, I actually maybe had a bit of a rest lap. I just needed it to just so I could make sure I could finish hard, because I knew, well, I think when you're running around the top 30, like everyone, no one really blows up. Everyone kind of can hold it together pretty good. So you got to make sure you're not the one blowing up, otherwise you're going to lose 10 spots.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, we're talking about countries that are sending six athletes. Like, you get to 18 yeah. pretty quick when you go Kenya, Ethiopia, Uganda.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And Eritrea was good as well. Yeah, so it is very quickly. At one stage in the second lap, I thought I was, like, going really well. I thought I was about top 20. And then people, like, count what place you're in and they yell it to you. And someone said 35th, and it just kind of broke my heart, because I'm like, oh, I thought I was going so well here.
Yeah, right, especially when you've been kind of that top 30 before, like, you need to find a few more spots.
Yeah, and I knew, like, the whole time, like, I was about 32nd, I think, at the start of the last lap. I'm like, all right, I've got to try to get a few more spots here. Mm. And I actually got into 28th at the top of the roof hill.
Yeah.
And then I got passed by three people on the downhill, and then I got back past one. But, yeah, I was trying my hardest then, because I was just like a little goal to kind of keep me going and try to get every little spot I could.
Yeah, well, that's that team aspect of it as well. And you guys, you know, we spoke about it on the show, Pat Tiernan was named, Stewie was named, and then both of them didn't start. Like, you guys still finished eighth, which is pretty respectful, and in front of the US team as well, which was loaded with, as you said, kind of five Kenyans. But yeah, what was the vibe with the, well, how early out did you know about the Stewie pulling out?
So I'd been with him all week and he'd been pretty sick. So we knew it was a fairly good chance he wasn't going to run, but he waited until, he saw the IAAF doctor the day before and he said he shouldn't run. So we knew it confirmed, but we knew even if he did run, he wasn't going to be at his best. But yeah, it did suck that Pat and Stu were out, but it also meant that Matt Ramsey got a chance to run and he ended up being the second Aussie. He hit a blinder.
Must be pretty proud of him as well, like a younger kid of the group.
Yeah, I was so happy for him. He crossed the line and I go, he goes, oh, 49th. And I'm like, oh, that's so good. And then someone's like, no, he came 39th. And like, I was like, geez, you're just behind me.
Yeah, it's coming for you.
I know.
So was the team like happy with that, like that eighth? Is like, or maybe does it, maybe tell us, like, is it as his team feel, or is it just a whole bunch of individuals out there? Like, is it NCAA cross country kind of team feel, or is kind of doing your own thing as well?
I wouldn't say it's NCAA feel. It's definitely individual, but I think because we were missing Stewie and Pat, kind of we more went into the individual thing. I think if we all had been there, we might have been like, all right. But then again, like, looking at the results, like, we wouldn't have been able to get a team medal just because the three, like, Uganda, Ethiopia, and Kenya were so strong. But maybe we could have got a top five. But I think everyone was kind of happy. Jack was also, he was sick a couple of weeks ago, so he was also a little bit underperformed. So, and we kind of knew that before. So we didn't get to send our strongest team, unfortunately.
Yeah, and the females, like, watching them beforehand in fifth?
To be honest, I didn't get to watch them because, I was warming up, and then I didn't even know their results until after mine. And then, they all had fantastic runs.
Yeah, well, that was a bit of a surprise for us. Like, we were thinking, like, the men, and then obviously Stewie pulling out, and, the women, very irrespectful kind of stuff, top five.
Yeah, it was funny. Like, we talked up getting a team medal, and they were way closer than us, so... good on them.
That's cross though, isn't it? Like, there's so many variables, and like, you got to feel good on the day, otherwise it just smashes you. Yeah. Like, you can't be just exposed one tiny bit or you're gone.
And I think it was that course as well that if for some reason if it suited you, you could have a blinder. And for some reason if you were struggling, you could go bad, and then you could run the next week on a completely different course and the results could be completely different. So, and that is cross country.
Mm, yeah, well said. Hey, before I let you go, you got a marathon in 4 weeks' time. How's all the preparation going for that?
Yeah, good. So London Marathon in 4 weeks now. I think I'm going all right. I think Saturday was a good indication that I'm pretty fit.
Yeah.
And it's, I think to get 30th when I'm in like heavy marathon training and all that and doing pretty much no specific hill work or anything, then I reckon I'm going to be – should be ready by London.
Yeah, well, we had you on just after Fukuoka, and you kind of, I think you said at that stage you were terrified about your next marathon after that experience. Like, have you had some time to reflect, obviously, and how's the headspace going into this one?
Yeah, I was like hoping that Nick would say I could run 1500s or something. And then he sent me a message saying, yeah, you're in London. I'm like, oh, great. So I guess I'll do that. But no, I'm, yeah, looking forward to it now. It's been good having Jack around, and now I'm in London. And I can just train here. And we've got Charlotte Purdue, who's in the women's race. And then Sinead will be over here in a couple of weeks. So we've got a nice little group. It's kind of been good having the two girls around because they're a lot more experienced than us and been able to work together. And I can kind of talk to them about it.
Yeah. What are some of the things you ask them about?
More just to do with, like, kind of the training and, like, the fueling, that what they've done. And because I had that problem with my quads and, like, kind of spoke to them a lot about that, and even just with the training. Like, I remember a couple of weeks ago, me and Sinead like had a big session on the Thursday, and then we did like a solid long run on the Sunday. We turned up to training on the Tuesday, and we were both just cooked and like we're terrible. And then, but at least like we could talk about it and how we felt, and like then we talked about it on the Wednesday how we felt, and then the Thursday how we felt again. So we kind of like fed each other and. Like, so yeah, okay, this is just the training. It's not us in a hole or anything like that.
Yeah, because I think last time you did say something about doing, like, more longer runs to, like, get the conditioning in your quads more prepared. Like, is that something you've definitely done in this build-up?
Yeah, I've done more, maybe not longer runs, but I've done more long sessions on road. Like, yeah, stuff like 20K of K on, K off, and then like, or 4x5K and stuff like that, where I didn't really do as much of that last time.
Yeah, and a goal going in, or just enjoy the experience and do what you do and see what happens at the end of it?
I'm still waiting to find out what pace the British group will be. But you've got guys like Callum Hawkins and Cam Levins just pulled out, but there should be a lot running around 2:10 pace, so I think that's the pace that I'll be going at. Because the other paces are like, 2:03, which is probably a bit quick, and then 2:06, I think. So I think the 2:10 is probably a more sensible one.
Yeah, yeah, smart thinking. And Jack obviously starting as well, so that's kind of exciting that you two guys get to train together and then be on the start line together.
Yeah, exactly. It's good. We hang out pretty much every day in Melbourne, so it's no different being here and training together, and I think we work pretty well together, so hopefully we'll be together in the race as well.
Oh, well, mate, we've got a whole stack of listeners, and like us three on the show are super excited about what you guys are going to do. And thanks for sharing a bit of a reflection on the world cross country, and all the best for the next couple of weeks in the build up to London.
No worries. Thank you very much for having me.
No worries at all. All right, women's race. Brad, you want to read out some names for me? It's a bit tricky on the side. Go for it.
Yeah, so the race was won by Helen Abiri in 36:14. Dara Dida from Ethiopia was second in 36:16. And Giddy, first name starts with Earl, from Ethiopia was third in 36:24. So the Aussies, Melissa Duncan was 26th in 38:47. Paige Campbell was 29th in 38:52. Emily Brikacek, 35th in 39:18. 44th was Marnie Ponton in 39:43. 45th was Leanne Pomponini in 39:46. And 69th place was Caitlin Adams in 40:42. And the women finished fifth in the team section, which was an incredible result. Because I remember when we were talking basically after the World Cross trial, we're like, oh, do you reckon they'll send a full team for the women's? Like, we didn't know if, you know, people like Sinead had pre-selected or whatever. And We probably didn't expect them to go as well as they did, but it was a fantastic result. Thoughts?
Yeah, I'm just looking at team results now, and we're only 2 points behind Great Britain in fourth, but in front of like Bahrain, which probably has a whole stack of Kenyans in their team, in front of Canada, in front of the US, in front of France, Spain, Tanzania, Japan. So some strong countries we finished in front of. I was, yeah, super proud to kind of see that result as an Australian.
Very strong running.
Getting patriotic.
Again, you look at the top competitor, Melissa Duncan, 26th at World Cross. That's a result you retire and you look back on.
And I think she's come off some injuries and stuff, hasn't she, Brad, in the past?
Yep. It's good to see Melissa back out there after missing the last Olympics. So, big fan of Mel.
Yeah, that's a solid run, 26.
What about Paige Campbell? I don't know much about Paige. I'm imagining she's just come out of juniors and starting to perform in the seniors, but 29th? We've got to keep an eye on that girl. 29th at World Cross Country.
And 5 seconds behind Melissa.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and you look at that, I'm just in the women's results now, and everyone was African until it got to 15th. Mm. So, yeah, like if you take out Uganda, Kenya, Ethiopia, these girls nearly win in the race.
Well, it's World Cross Country for a reason.
Yes, they invite the whole world.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive fifth spot
it's
there.
It's not a white person cross country.
Under 20 men, Sam Clifford, he finished 30th, 26-25. It's the highest placed Australian for 10 years in that race. And the good thing about this story is that Sam's still young enough that he'll be able to do this race in 2 years' time. Same thing with Jackson Sharp in 36. He ran 26-33. Who else is in this race, Brad?
Tacole Gettinet from Queensland. He ran 43rd in 26-40. And Ollie Raymond was 78th in 27.55. And also Tommy Campbell was 85th in 28.14. There you go, Brady.
No worries at all. Thank you for helping me with some names pronunciation there. Moose, tell us about the women's under 20.
Yeah, watch this race. This is the one that I did get. Sarah Schiffman went out hard early, was leading the race basically, was in front of the Africans for at least, I reckon she got through one lap. Or she was close to getting through a lap. Maybe they dropped her up the museum. So the Australia got a bit of airtime here, but she faded to finish 42nd. It's almost like we missed the camera angle where she fell over because she dropped back really quickly. But top place finisher was 16th, Lauren Carey, 22.02. Again, highest place by an Aussie for 10 years. So that's an impressive performance. And 16th, she's getting up there. It's funny because we didn't see much of her on the footage. She must have worked her way through late, I reckon. 38th, Lucinda Crouch from Queensland, 23.02. 42nd was Sarah. 72nd, Abby Caldwell. Victoria, 24.12. And 80th was Nikita Moore from Queensland.
Very good. Awesome results over there. Pretty amazing to watch. Brad, can you tell us about this Run West 12K? It looked like a big event in its first year.
Yeah, so it's a new event that starts at like a racetrack and runs through a new zoo. I don't think there's any animals in the zoo yet, but there will be next year when it's run. So, yeah, it was first year it's been conducted, and Benny Saint won the men's race in a time of 36.23. And his fiancée, Katie Conlon, was the winner in the women's in 43.51. So I think Dave Craniti finished third in that race as well. And Kieran Tall was second in the men's. I don't know much about the event, but I did see there was a lot of people that missed the start due to some parking issues, had to just ditch their cars and run 2K to the start. And so I did see a bit of bad media for that race. But I've also seen people say that one day it's going to be bigger than City to Serve. So it's always hard getting an event off the ground, but it seems like it went well other than a few hiccups at the start.
Yeah, I only heard good stuff. Didn't know that parking stuff, so that's good.
Yeah.
And Jessica Hull, she won the Stanford Invitation 5K in a new PB and broke the Oregon club record. She dominated that race and took 55 seconds off her PB to run 15.34. So we're getting down there, boys. Pretty impressive time. And the previous record was 16:40, so absolutely destroyed that. That's a name to watch in Australian distance running. Maybe similar story to Morgan McDonald, I reckon. Going to call it now.
What club's she from?
Oregon. What did I say?
No, you broke a club record. What's this club record you're talking about?
Bankstown. Sorry.
Yeah. Right. I think she was, I think before Bankstown, she was down around one of the clubs at Wollongong, like Kembla Joggers or Illawarra Blue Stars or something.
Behind the scenes news as well, started following us on Instagram. Maybe she's sniffing around for for an interview, Croker, up your way.
Not the first one to ask for an interview.
Yeah, you start following us, that's a good start. Boys. Right.
Rail Trail.
Yeah, you got a number generator ready. I've got the Facebook post and the Instagram post. They actually come on board and said, hey, we can give out two prizes here. We'll give out one for Instagram and one for Facebook. If you guys get a number generator going, I'll tell you what that aligns with the comments.
All right, I've got one here.
How many numbers we got to put in?
Shit. I didn't count that up. Facebook's counting them for me. And they have got, let me scroll down. This is amazing radio, but everyone who's entered is sitting on the ends of their seat here. 93 on Facebook. That's a bit unlucky.
1 to 93.
Can one of you boys look up how many? Oh, I haven't loaded more comments. Jeez, I don't know. Just go like 1 to like 60 on Instagram, Brad. You get Instagram going. Right. And we'll go.
1 to 93.
You go 1 to 93, Moose. You know, we're going to have to count.
Number 11.
For Instagram?
For Instagram, yeah.
All right, I've got to get this right, because if I don't, someone's going to remind me. Xavier Mead has won this one. Mm. So you know Xavier?
He's a Bendigo boy, isn't he?
Yeah, he is, but I think he's been in Melbourne for a long time. And I remember, caught the train up to come to our live Collis Birmingham interview. And his tag
David Mead relative?
No. Nathan Mead's brother. You may have seen him on the TV ads before, and he does a bit of running in Bendigo as well. So well done, guys. We'll be in contact there to give you the prize. Brad, what number you got?
No, I just did that one.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, I think we went the red. 93. Moose, this is you.
Number 58.
Carry on, and I'll count it. So what number was it? 58.
58. So you got to go. You got to go past the 35. You got to go back 35. Listener question. We don't have one this week. We are short on listener questions, which doesn't mean we've answered every listener question. We may have just lost some along the way. So if you've sent something in that we haven't answered, send it in again, and we'll put it on the top of the pile. Or if you're at home listening to the podcast, send in your listener questions, because we love answering the listener questions. Moose on the Loose, you've already done it pretty much, haven't you?
Talked about that age group, cheating, we'll call it, where someone makes up a birth date from a random number generator, just like we did, I think. Well, they put down the same birth date for everybody. It's just... some of them on there are just ridiculous. I've seen some of those junior athletes where their birthday's January 1st, like 2000, where they've just found like the most practical date they could find, or the first date that came to mind, and put it down. And it's just so blatantly obvious. But yeah, it's just, I guess junior athletics doesn't matter that much anyway. It's all senior athletics, and then you can have a 50-year-old. You can be 50 or 60 if you want, then. You still compete against the 20-year-olds. So it's not as big of a deal as I'm sort of making out, but it's still nice to know you're competing against people your own age group, rather than like, I think I've heard one story where if you can rock up to like the Kenyan Cross Country Championships, and if you're not that fit, you feel like you're running juniors that day. Oh, running the junior race. It's like the B race almost, not the junior race. It's the thirds.
Just do 8K instead of 12 or 10 or whatever.
Yeah, but when you're fit, you run in the opens because you're fit.
Culture as well. It's a cultural thing.
I don't think they give there's not too much concern giving the junior championships there or in that area.
Yeah. What's coming up? There's a bit coming up. Brad, you're back with us. You finished counting or what? It was hard, wasn't it? I told you.
Dale Sutherland is the winner.
Who'd he tag in it?
He tagged, bear with me, Sophie Holland-Smith.
What's coming up, boys? There's plenty coming up. We got the Australian Championships, the track championships there on at Sydney. They've started at the moment. Some big races over the weekend, the 1500 for men and the 800 for men and women, which will be, and the 1500 for women as well. They'll be both good to watch. And the steeples run for the kids is coming up. Moose nearly won that one year, didn't you?
Run for the kids?
Yeah. Did you nearly win?
Nah, fuck no. Jeez. I've been smoked every time I go there.
Jeez, I'll come third there once. Tell you what, quick fact for you. Third.
Who beat you?
Liam Adams and Mottram, I think.
Who was fourth?
Nick Earl. Collis. Damn. Craig Appleby. Right. Can't remember the rest of them.
No, no. Skillzo's going up. He reckons he's going to win it. He's told everyone he's going to win it anyway.
He's won it before.
Oh, he tapped. I know. Don't you worry. He's still got the TV one in his front yard with a trophy attached to it.
Oh, very good.
Speaking of Collis, Moose, is any updates? He's been a bit quiet on Strava. Is he just lessening the noise?
I don't know. Going stealth mode.
Yeah.
Yeah, no idea.
He's just disappeared.
I wish I was back with the group, missed the banter, and I would actually know what's going on.
Mm.
I might have to check in. Tomorrow I'm running with Watto, he'll tell me. He'll give me a good update.
Give an update. Boston's coming up too in the next couple of weeks, so that'd be something to look out for. London 4, it's marathon season. Heaps is coming up.
Canberra Marathon. Canberra. Or Australian Running Festival.
Who's running that, Brad? I got a few punters in that.
Matt Cox is, I believe.
Ooh, there's a 2:14 man running as well, Nick Earl.
Is he?
Yeah, he's running. Yeah, he's running. He's backing up.
Oh, goodness.
Yep, he'll be there. He's going to stay at Brad's place. I'm just trying to get that organised between the two of them, looking for some accommodation. That's coming up, Canberra. We're also working on, because we've all been injured, we're working on a bit of bonus content, a couple of side projects. And, over at Patreon Extra Elite, Moose has got a bonus one coming up soon with some coaches, Gary Howard out of Sydney Run Crew and Jacko Elliott out of Gold Coast Running Co. They're going to have a panel discussion about all the questions sent in. I'm working on a new side project called Inside the Marathon, where I'm going to talk to one Olympian once a month, and we're going to focus on their one Olympic performance. So talk about like qualifying, training camps, Olympic Village, the actual race, reflections, kind of do a real big deep dive into this one performance, which I'm looking forward to. I've got that one recording the end of this week, so that's going to be out soon. And Brad, you're interviewing some big guests as well coming up.
Yeah, I'm interviewing Benita Willis on Friday, so the only Australian to ever have won World Cross, so I'm really excited by that. That's a phenomenal, like, based on what we've chatted about tonight, to be able to win World Cross is, unbelievable. So if any listeners hear this before Friday morning, get your questions in.
So excited you even did a Facebook post asking for questions, Moose. Did you see that?
Yeah.
No, he doesn't want to do any work for this one. He'll get the listeners to write the questions, and then he just has to make the phone call.
I nearly fell off my seat. I'm like, who the hell's posting this stuff on the Facebook page? Posted by Bradley Croker. Didn't know you had to get in there.
People show. Why not? You know, like, they'll often think of a question that we won't, so why not?
Mm. Yeah. Interviews, I just listened to Pat Carroll and Ray Boyd. Both pretty funny fellas. Yeah. I also listened to Grant Giles as well. I went on a bit of a binge of our interviews. How about Boydie? How about Duna?
Yep, Duna.
What a nickname. That is the greatest thing I've ever... I lost my shit when I heard that. Sean Quilty's nickname is Duna.
You've never heard that?
Never heard that before, but I absolutely loved it. I thought it was the most classic Aussie thing I ever heard.
Duna's still going around the pro circuit too. Still wins at Stawell every year. He's a good bloke.
Oh, really? Yep. Duna and Rowdy.
Yep. Yeah, it's a good chat, wasn't it? Interviewing guys like Ray Boyd make it very easy. Like,
I really liked it.
Yeah.
I liked them all though. Like Pat Carroll. Like, geez, that bloke was stiff. Bloody, where was it? Sydney. real stiff. Runs 2:12, gets the time. Oh, was it Sydney?
No, I think it was Atlanta.
Atlanta, yeah. Yeah, Atlanta, real stiff. I thought that was pretty cruel, actually, a bit harsh.
Oh, yeah. We are out. Here's a chat with Alan McCubbin. Hope you get something out of it. Morton study, some stuff about some nutrition. Enjoy. We'll see you next week. There'll be some bonus stuff dropping in between then. Bye, boys.
See you, lads.
See ya.
See ya.
Born to the river, a black blood in my veins. I found out when I was just a child that your skin can bring you so much pain. Now I hear you say, got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes and tell me if you take my place.
All right, Alan McCubbin, you're back on Inside Running Podcast. Last time we heard from you was back in episode number 31. So doesn't feel like that long ago, but welcome back to the show.
Been busy doing episodes, I guess.
Oh, yeah, one a week. They start to add up a bit, I suppose. So, yeah, it's good to hear your voice again, and I'm looking forward to hearing a bit more about the sports nutrition science world that I don't know a lot about and you're an expert in.
Yeah, it's certainly good to be back.
Yeah, well, tell us about we've kind of got you on the show because you did a bit of a Morton study recently, and that's kind of the it and a bit in the nutrition sports marathon world at the moment, and we see a lot of marketing around it, and I guess you guys decided to do this study for that exact reason, and you got some kind of results to share?
Yeah. So we, just to give you a bit of background, so I'm at Monash University, and we do a huge amount of research in the gastrointestinal space and exercise. So a lot of it actually came from ultramarathon running and findings that obviously gut issues are a big issue in sort of the ultra running scene. And then from that sort of started off with observational studies, you know, going to races and talking to people and that kind of thing, through to lab-based studies. And I certainly can't take the credit for that because my PhD is in sodium, completely unrelated to the gut stuff. But there's a whole team at Monash that's their specialty, and they're basically the world leaders in that now, having done a lot of that work over the last sort of 5 to 10 years. They've developed a model of why gut problems happen during exercise, all the different causes, and then more now into the different ways to prevent or manage those problems in athletes, whether they're runners or not. And this hydrogel study is obviously a piece of that puzzle in terms of people using hydrogel drinks to try and reduce their gut problems during exercise. So we thought, well, we're looking into all these other prevention management strategies. This one's popular and being used a lot, but there really isn't published research out there. So let's have a take a look at it ourselves.
Can you start off and tell us what's the difference between a hydrogel and a normal gel that people have been using for years?
Yeah, so a hydrogel is basically, I mean, the word gel is kind of self-explanatory if you think about a gel or jelly, that kind of consistency of a substance. A hydrogel is one that forms that with water, hence hydro in particular. And hydrogels, I mean, we kind of think of them in terms of their use in sports drinks as being very recent, but they've actually been around for decades. You can look at research into hydrogels going back to the 1980s, and they're used in things like wound dressings and all kinds of things as well. But a lot of the early work in terms of putting them in your mouth and having them go through your gut was more around the pharmaceutical side of things. So looking at using hydrogels to try and improve the delivery of certain types of medications through the gut and then into the bloodstream in the desired way that they wanted it. But obviously in that situation, you're trying to, you know, deliver milligram quantities of a drug in someone who's, you know, sitting down or lying in bed or, you know, resting, not exercising. So this is obviously a very different situation where you're trying to deliver, you know, tens of grams of carbohydrate per hour for multiple hours potentially in someone who is exercising as well. So it's quite a different kettle of fish. But I guess that's where the, from as far as I can tell, that's where that sort of concept has come from in the first place.
Yeah, and that's a big thing for us distance runners, isn't it? Trying to actually absorb it and how much to get in and being able to kind of use it and not end up vomiting it at the end of the race straight into a bin like I did at Berlin.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I guess people think once it's in your mouth, it's inside your body. I guess you can think of it physiologically a little bit different to that. You know, once it's in your mouth, it's in the gastrointestinal tract, but that's not really technically in your body, in that it's got to be then absorbed into the bloodstream to then have an effect and be travelled around to all your muscles where you actually want to use that carbohydrate to produce energy.
And is it safe to say, like, the faster you're moving, the harder it is for that to happen?
To some degree, yes. So the model that's been come up with sort of to describe how sort of gut problems occur during exercise sort of has two main pathways that cause these issues. One is a lack of blood flow to the gut, and that is partly dependent on the exercise intensity and, you know, how hard, how fast you're going, but it's dependent on a whole bunch of other factors as well, you know, body temperature, heat and humidity, hydration, etc. But the other area, which is probably more relevant, particularly in the shorter distances, and when I say shorter, I mean sort of marathon and shorter than that, is the nervous system that affects how your stomach empties it. It affects or controls how quickly things move through your intestines from your stomach out to the other end, and that is affected by stress hormones as well. And the stress response to exercise. So, you know, all exercise has some stress response, but the higher intensity the exercise is, generally speaking, the higher the stress response. Other things like hydration have an impact on that stress response as well. So there's a few different things going on, and that will affect how quickly the stomach empties and how fast things move through the gastrointestinal tract. And we think now also possibly the cells that line the gut, where you actually absorb all of these nutrients out of the gut and into the bloodstream, can be affected by that nervous system as well.
Oh, so complicated. It just means, like, yeah, it's just another thing for marathoning, getting everything together to be able to apply it on the same day.
Yeah, and it's really tricky. Like, if you look at the model that explains all of this, like, it's almost a full page diagram with all the flow charts and arrows going in all different directions and back on each other and all sorts of things. And I think the takeaway that we have from that is that there is no one single cause of gut problems during exercise. There are lots of different factors that can contribute to it. And unless you completely remove all of those factors, which is a lot of work, or you go and do an assessment to actually measure these things in a lab, you're not going to know what the cause is for that one person. And so you're stuck kind of doing trial and error and doing little bits and pieces, which, you know, sometimes you get to the bottom of what's going on, but sometimes there's more than one cause, and so you're taking things out one at a time and you never figure it out.
Yeah, complicated stuff. So tell us, why this study in the first place?
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess that sort of hydrogel concept had been out, obviously, commercially for probably a year or two by the early stages of last year, and a lot of people was sort of talking about it. There was a lot of buzz and excitement around hydrogels for gastrointestinal issues. So from our perspective, we're interested in studying things that potentially prevent or manage gut issues during exercise, and this is obviously one that was fairly new, one that there really wasn't any data at the time available on it. So we decided to have a look at it ourselves.
Well, the data was all anecdotal, wasn't it? Like, it was almost like it was this magic pill that Eliud Kipchoge was drinking and everyone else, like the who's who of marathon runners. I know their website, they do an amazing job of just putting all those guys on the front landing page. And especially when it wasn't available in Australia early on, it felt like we were missing out on something that could have been really special.
Spot on. And we had to actually buy ours overseas. We were lucky, a couple of guys from the team went over to Spain for a conference last year, so we were able to get some delivered there and bring it home to Australia. I think it is available here now.
Yes, it is. It's just started not so long ago. Yeah, and sold out as well. I've spoken to the distributor, and he's waiting on another shipment just because it's selling so well.
Mm. Yeah, so that was obviously another challenge. But in some ways it was a bit of a blessing in disguise for us when it came to running the study, because I know some of the colleagues in the UK that have been doing studies, it has a distinctive taste because of the alginate that comes from seaweed, which is an ingredient in forming that hydrogel. So it can be difficult to come up with a placebo that has an identical taste to it. Mm. Whereas we found here in Australia, because the product wasn't available, none of the participants that were in the study had ever tasted the product before. So from a blinding point of view, people knew whether they were taking the placebo or the hydrogel drink. They couldn't tell, and certainly when we asked them afterwards, it was about 50-50 whether they correctly guessed, which suggests that they were just guessing by chance. So we were kind of lucky in that sense.
And someone like with your qualifications and the scientific knowledge, when you see that those kind of anecdotal claims being put out there, do you just kind of start shaking your head and want to see the evidence?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. I think, you know, with a lot of things that happen in sports science, often the athletes and coaches figure out things a long time before the scientists do. They may not get it exactly right. They may not get, you know, the mechanism of what's going on in the body right. But often people tend to figure out stuff over a period of time. Now, obviously, this was something that happened so quickly and it was so new that that's probably not the case here. But you can think of examples like things like protein. And this is completely unrelated to running, but, you know, for years bodybuilders talked about having more protein and having it more often, and people used to laugh at them and say they didn't know what they were talking about. But then as the research crept up, it was like, well, actually, probably the requirements for building muscle are higher than we previously thought, and actually having protein more frequently is beneficial. And the same happens with, I think, a lot of the sort of the training sports science research as well. You know, people do things around different training methods and so on, and then go back to the coaches with all this data really excited, and the coaches say, oh, I could have told you that. We've been doing that for 20 years.
Yeah. So tell us about the study. What did it entail?
Yeah, so our particular study, we had 8 people come in. They were all endurance runners. This is the first study. There is a couple that were presented at the same conference as us or in the same week as us, but they were all done in cyclists. So as far as I know, this is the first study that's had any results made public in runners. So we had 9 runners, in terms of what level they were at. To give you an idea, their VO2 max was 59. So they were decent but not exceptional runners. And their average training volume was about 9 hours a week.
Yeah.
So what they did is they came into the lab, we did a VO2 max test with them, and then we worked out what 60% of their VO2 max was in terms of running speed. So you do your VO2 max, get them back on the treadmill about 15 minutes later, adjust the speed on the treadmill up and down until we work out what speed 60% of VO2 max is for them. And in this study, it was 9.9 Ks an hour is the average. So once we've done that, we then get them back a couple of weeks later, and they actually ran at that 9.9 k's an hour or whatever it was for that individual. I think the fastest was about 13. And they ran at that speed for 3 hours. And then during that 3 hours, we fed them. We fed them 90 grams an hour of carbohydrate, and that was either through the hydrogel drink or through a placebo, which was basically identical except it didn't have the alginate and the pectin that make it form a hydrogel in your stomach. Same sodium as well. So they did that for 3 hours, and then we measure throughout those 3 hours a whole barrage of things. So we look at their heart rate, we look at their blood glucose every half an hour, we look at what we call their perceived exertion, so how hard you feel that you're working. We stick the mask on just like in a VO2 test, and we can actually measure how much carbohydrate versus fat they're using during exercise and the actual amounts of those, so we do that every half an hour as well. And they rate their gastrointestinal, or if they have any gastrointestinal symptoms, and then each different type, and they give them ratings on a scale that's used quite frequently in research. So we do all of that for the 3 hours. And because we were conscious, the 60% was done because we do a lot of our work with ultra runners, and they're the most likely to have gut issues. But we're also conscious that, you know, hydrogel drinks and Morton has really been targeted towards more the marathon, half marathon running community. So what we did at the end of the 3 hours is we started speeding up the treadmill, and we did what's called a time to exhaustion test. So we started off at the speed they were already running the 3 hours at, and then it got 2 Ks an hour faster every 3 minutes. And they did that with the mask on, and we were able to measure their carbohydrate and fat use during that time, basically until they couldn't run anymore and we had to stop the test. And so we did that whole test once through with the hydrogel drink, and then they came back a couple of weeks later and did the whole test again with the placebo.
Okay, so that's where the money is after that kind of 3 hours for you guys, because I was just thinking, like, 60%, I know if I was out running at 60% compared to my marathon pace, it'd be a whole different situation to how my body would handle the drinks.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. So there's some data that suggests that, you know, gastric emptying, so the speed that your stomach empties food and fluid, starts to slow down a bit above 70% of VO2 max. The reason why we do 60% and 3 hours is because gastrointestinal issues are far more likely in those sort of longer ultra endurance type events. Yes, you do see them in marathon running or half, but generally it's less than 10% of people report those kind of symptoms, whereas in the ultra stuff it can be up to 80% of people. And obviously you don't, you can't run an ultra at 70, 75% of VO2 max, you know, conk out after 2-3 hours. So yeah, I mean, we were conscious to go for the full 3 hours. The other reason we did that is that we wanted to reduce the amount of glycogen that the body has down to, you know, as low as possible. So the carbohydrate that the body's using is what's coming in from the drink, as opposed to what's already stored in their muscle.
Yeah, I'm feeling for some of those participants though. 3 hours on the treadmill wouldn't have been much fun.
Yeah, they were allowed to watch a movie or a podcast or that sort of thing, and then we interrupt them every 15 or 20 minutes to take measurements. But yeah, definitely, it's it wouldn't be my idea of fun.
Yeah, I've been there for 2 hours, I think, not for 3 hours. But yeah, yeah, tell us about some of the results then. What'd you find?
Yeah, so there's a whole bunch of data that we collect. Some of it is to tell us what happened, and some of it is more controlled data just to make sure there are no differences between the two trials in the things that we want to be the same. So their hydration status, for example, they came in at exactly the same body weight and the same amount of body water, the same glucose before they started. They lost the same amount of weight through sweat, etc. So that was all good. In terms of the findings, I guess, that are relevant to athletes, blood glucose responses were basically the same. So the amount of carbohydrate that was coming from the drink and then being absorbed into the bloodstream, that the timing or the speed of that absorption and the total amount absorbed seemed to be the same between the two drinks. The gastrointestinal symptoms, every single participant in both trials had at least one symptom, but that could be very minor, like a fart could be a symptom, for example. Yeah. But in terms of severe symptoms, again, there was no significant difference between the two groups. And there wasn't any pattern in terms of whether one group was more likely to have what we call upper gastrointestinal symptoms, so nausea, urge to vomit and that kind of thing, or reflux, versus lower GI, so, you know, gas, wind, diarrhea, that kind of thing. So there was no difference there. No difference in nausea or total gut discomfort. No difference in heart rate. No difference in the use of carbohydrate or fat during exercise. And then at the end of the 3 hours, when they came to do the time to exhaustion, so they get progressively faster. So we've measured them, or the average sort of intensities were 65% of VO2 max, about 69%, about 78%, and then about 88% of VO2 max. And again, the use of carbohydrate and fat was not different between the two drinks. And then the final thing we do is for the 2 hours after they stop running is we actually measure what we call breath hydrogen, which is basically a measure of is any of that carbohydrate not getting absorbed by the body and going through into your large intestine where the bacteria will eat it up. And we found, again, no major problems and no major differences between the two drinks in the 2 hours post-exercise.
So we're breaking even, all on par, if that's what it sounds like, yeah.
Yep, so the time to exhaustion, for what it's worth, so the actual time that they could go before they had to stop running, with the hydrogel was just over, it was 12.03 minutes, and the placebo was 12.15 minutes, and those, you know, statistically you couldn't split them.
Mm. So what's the verdict? It's marketing?
It's hard to tell.
I mean, I
think that in this situation, it doesn't seem that the hydrogel is doing anything of benefit, but this is obviously one specific situation. It's more tailored to the lower intensity running, although we did run them at that higher intensity briefly at the end, but it didn't seem to make an impact in that sort of 3 hours. You know, it's going to be your first 3 hours of an ultra marathon or something like that. I believe there is a study going on at the moment which is doing it at more 70% of VO2 max for 2 hours, I think. So it'll be interesting to see once the results of that come out, and I think that'll be the second study doing in running, and that's, I'm pretty sure that one's associated with the sub 2 hour project.
Yeah, okay, that'd be interesting. And do you know if they're, I'm not sure if you know officially, if they're aligned with Morton at all?
I think they are. Certainly when they present their data, the Morton logo tends to appear on the bits and pieces that they're putting out. So yeah. I would assume that that's the case.
Sponsored study. That could be interesting then.
Yeah, well, that's not the first sponsored study.
Yeah, we've heard all about that in the old sugar industry or whatever it is.
Well, also that, you know, other companies have been doing studies around Morton as well, so... SIS, for example, Science in Sport, have published some stuff just the week before the conference late last year, with their own comparison, and that one was done in cycling, not in running.
Yeah, do you know why cycling, not running?
I think a lot of the studies are done in cycling, and even the first stuff coming out of the sub-2-hour project is actually in cycling as well, which seems a bit odd, but it's easier to do a lot of the protocols. You can do various types of sampling and things and collect certain types of data in cycling much more easily compared to running, because you know, the person's reasonably still. So that does make it a lot easier. And I think for some of the longer protocols in terms of time, it's easier to recruit people. People are more willing to ride for 2 or 3 hours than they are to run for 2 or 3 hours on a treadmill.
Yeah, and how was the response when you presented this overseas?
I personally actually wasn't there because it was the week before Christmas. I've got kids and a bunch of other stuff. I couldn't make it over myself. But I think that the reaction generally was positive. As I said, you know, the SIS results were released the week before the conference. So that kind of got the talk about this whole hydrogel area started quite early before the conference had even begun. There was another study there from, I think it's the University of Stirling, which is up in Scotland, and that one was affiliated with Sub 2 Project and with Morton, and that was also presented there. And as I said, that one was in cycling. So I think there was a bit of talk around sort of hydrogels more broadly, rather than singling out our study specifically. But I think, you know, generally the reaction from people through social media and so on has been quite positive. So, you know, people are thankful that we've done it and interested to see what we came up with, and generally pretty happy with the way we did the study as well, which is pleasing.
Yeah, that's good. And anything to kind of leave the listeners with, like if someone's sitting here listening to this, thinking about trying Morton or any hydrogel for their next marathon?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably two things from my perspective. The first one is that the studies to date have generally done these kind of lower intensities of exercise. The cycling one that the University of Stirling did was at 95% of lactate threshold, so probably a bit higher intensity. This new one running at 70% of VO2 max will be interesting to see when that comes out. But I guess, you know, if you look at the cutting edge of, you know, people doing elite marathon running, they're going to be working at a higher intensity than that, and particularly half marathon running. So whether you see different results there, maybe time will tell. The other thing is, with a lot of these studies, when you're recruiting people, often the people that you recruit are more recreational runners, and that's no offense to them, but they're easier to recruit. There's, you know, obviously more of them. So you're not getting the elite of the elite runners generally in these kind of studies. So how applicable it is to a Kipchoge or someone like that is pretty hard to tell. The final thing I would say about this is nothing in here suggests that the hydrogel was worse.
Yeah,
so
true.
So if you prefer the flavour of Morton because it doesn't have a strong flavour, fine, drink it. No issue there whatsoever. If you prefer it, the drink, the philosophy, whatever it is, then, you know, it's not going to make anything worse. Is it going to help? Well, from the studies that have been done to date, we haven't seen any differences. As I said, maybe we haven't designed a study to look at a particular scenario where it might be different, but for the scenario study to date, we don't see a difference. And I think that's important when you're interpreting any research, is you look at what scenario was created in that study, because really you can only apply those results to that scenario.
Yeah, and one thing I've really got out of this conversation as well is I've kind of written it off after I got to the finish line at Berlin, but it was the first thing that happened when I crossed the line that I spewed it all back up. But that looking, when you said about hydration and body temperature, like that was a warmish day, whereas I'm going to Japan this weekend and it's going to be a cool day. Like it's little things like that can impact your experience. And then, yeah, maybe I was too quick to write it off.
Yeah, maybe you would have spewed anything up.
Yeah, well, I'm back to the old gels mixed in my drinks, I was thinking, because last time I was in Japan, that actually worked well for me, but it could have just been the fact that when I was in Japan last time as well, it was a cool day. So, yeah, body temp and all those things could have a big lot to do with it.
Yeah, yep, for sure.
Beautiful, mate. Anything else we can look forward to in the future? Anything cutting edge that you can kind of give us a bit of insight into? You know, beetroot was around a couple of years ago. Anything like, did that even work actually while I've got you here?
Beetroot's an interesting one. There's still stuff going on around it even now, but probably for the last 10 years or so. But yeah, a lot of the early stuff was quite promising. Like a lot of the research I just talked about now, it was done in not elite athletes, and then some more stuff got done with elite athletes, and they found that the differences that they found were either a lot smaller or non-existent. And that tends to be what happens with a lot of supplement research. is that a supplement might work quite well in amateur or recreational athletes, and the more elite the athlete is, the less likely the supplement actually works, for a whole bunch of reasons I won't go into now. But yeah, that's a pretty common finding, and I think has been the case certainly with beetroot juice.
And anything else to keep an eye out on? No, like, remember when chia seeds came out after Born to Run, the book and stuff like that, everyone was buying those?
Yeah, there was actually a study at the time looking at carbohydrate loading with chia seeds as opposed to what people would normally carbohydrate load with. And I think they found that, you know, there was no difference in terms of how much glycogen you could get from carb loading with bucket loads of chia seeds. but, you know, the fiber content, I probably wouldn't recommend it. Unless you're used to it, of course.
Yeah, that's it. And that's another thing, like, placebo, you know, plays a big part in these things as well. If you think something's working for you, that placebo effect can be definitely beneficial.
Yeah, and that's why the blinding in these studies is so important, that people don't know what they're taking. And even the researchers writing down the data don't know what they're taking until afterwards.
Yeah. Awesome, mate. Well, thanks again for giving us some time to inform our listeners and myself about all things sports nutrition. I'm sure we'll have you back on the show to hear some more breaking kind of evidence, science-based stuff in the future. And yeah, thanks again.
No worries. Yeah, we've got a couple more interesting running studies coming up, a sodium one and an ultra running one in daytime and nighttime, looking at the differences. So we'll be recruiting for those probably, I'm guessing, late March, early April. So anyone who's in Melbourne and interested in doing some running for science and getting some good data out of it for their own use, we'll let you know via social media when they're ready to start recruiting.
Yeah, for sure. Share all that stuff with us as well, mate, because we can plug it at our end as well, just like that. Because I think they're doing some stuff at the AIS at the moment, the SPUD.
Spudathon.
Yeah, that looks interesting.
Yeah, I don't know much about that one myself, except that it's got the word spuds in it. And it seems to be looking at sort of shorter, like half marathon, marathon, but I don't know much more than that.
Yeah, it's exciting time for Australia to have these kind of studies going on.
Absolutely, and you know, as I said before, the AIS have done a really great job in they've been able to recruit people at that elite end of sports. You know, they've done all the race walking studies. I think they've done four of them now, where they've got people at sort of world and Olympic level from all over the world to come to Australia to participate in these studies and, you know, get 20 or 30 world-class race walkers in the same place at the same time to run a study. And that's pretty much unheard of. It's just so difficult to recruit that level of athlete. And I'm pretty sure they've done something similar with the Spudathon. I think the male participants, I think you have to be sub-228 for a marathon and sub-240 for women. So, you know, not super, super elite, but certainly much more so than your average study normally does.
Yeah, working at that kind of, that level of you're putting yourself on the limit kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Beautiful, Alan. Well, thanks again for your time and appreciate what you've told us today on the Inside Running Podcast.
Not a problem. Thanks.